Thanks, Rob. Justin Kaufman here. It's a Download 720 WGN. Well, a lot going on with Chicago media these days. Of course, as we mentioned in the carryout, the deadline for bids to buy the Sun-Times is on Wednesday. And we'll see what happens with that. As Natasha Korecki was reporting today, there was two other possible bidders outside of Michael Farah and Tronc. So we'll have to see how that plays out, and we'll talk about that, as well as some other stories that are out in the news world, the news media landscape. Scott Smith, my guest, the Download's new, you can't even say it anymore, joke doesn't work anymore.
Right.
Used to be the new media contributor. Now it's been a couple years. Great to see you, Scott. How are you?
Good to see you. Always good to be here.
Editorial director at Teamworks Media. And also, you can find him on Twitter, Our Man in Chicago. All right, so let's talk about this. This is something that, as we've seen the last couple of weeks, it was just announced. I mean, the Sun-Times in very dramatic fashion put a sort of a for sale ad to front page of their paper. And it felt to almost like a foregone conclusion that Tronc and Michael Farah were going to purchase the Sun-Times. But as we've seen in the last couple of days, there is interest in this paper.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. They had offered to Gannett and apparently a couple other people had kind of said, hey, we're for sale. Are you interested? And there didn't seem to be a lot of interest. And so as part of the getting the okay with the Justice Department, they had to make this big sort of public spectacle and say, we're for sale. If anybody else is interested, we're right over here in case anybody's got a spare $3 to $5 million lying around. And, you know, in some ways
that's
it
what
was
the cost is, $3 to $5 million.
I would say that's roughly what it is. Yeah. I mean, I think it's tough to say at this point, because unless you're sort of looking at the internal numbers, it's tough to say. Last I heard, the Sun-Times had been operating in the black, as had the Reader, although that may have changed in the very recent months. But they were at one point very recently operating profitably. So it's a question of who buys them and whether or not that they've got sort of the sales and marketing and technology back end, if you will, or staff to be able to support what they do. But they had to put this notice out there in order to see if there was, you know, really, truly anybody available to buy them. But essentially the deadline was 2 weeks. You know, they were basically given 2 weeks notice, which is anybody who's leaving a job knows that's just enough time to kind of clean out the office and, you know, forward a bunch of emails if you need to. And it's not a lot of time to actually get significant things done. And yet somehow, you know, there have been apparently a couple people coming out of the woodwork who are essentially, I would guess, interested enough that they want to be able to say that they are investing in media, they are investing in the idea of this continuing to be a quote-unquote two-newspaper town.
Do you run the risk when the price is so low that people come in who have either altruistic, like you said, intentions, or this is just a vanity project? It's something on the side where they're like, and we've seen this with the Sun-Times before. The Sun-Times has had non-newspaper owners in the last, you know, 10, even Michael Farah to an extent. I mean, did they run the risk of, you know, getting somebody in that's not in the business of media?
Perhaps, but, you know, here's the thing. There have been people who have not been in the business of media who have owned properties before. Most recently, locally here, Joe Mansueto, for example, owned Time Out Chicago. I think it was something to the effect of 5 to 7 years, which was a pretty good amount of time, at which point he decided to get out, and it kind of triggered them being bought back by their corporate parent. So somebody who has made their money in a different field potentially has the runway to say, I'm not really necessarily interested in this thing turning a profit in 1 to 2 years and turning around and selling it. I'm willing to invest in this thing for a little while. We've sort of seen that with DNA Info and Joe Ricketts, for example, somebody who's made their money in another space, who has mostly left it alone up until very recently with some of the things that they've had with their unionizing and what have you. But for the most part, those folks have a more likely tendency to kind of leave it alone unless they are seeing themselves as some kind of old school robber baron and using it to, you know, put the word out. And quite frankly, that's what the Sun-Times often looked like under Michael Farah. You know, you saw an obituary on the front page for a good friend of his. They got out of the endorsement business and then they got back into it in order to endorse Rauner. So it depends on the person is the
answer. Why would anybody, I mean, let's say it is somebody, I mean, you get an understanding why the Tribune would want the Tronc would want to own another media property.
Sure.
But why would any businessman at this stage of the game invest in a media company, especially a media company that is its bread and butter was based in a aging technology.
I think that they look at something like the Sun-Times and say that there's enough talent there to be able to rebuild in a digital platform, to be able to, you know, really, if you look at what's happened in the Sun-Times, it has been somewhat used and abused in the last, you know, ownership round that it's had. There have not necessarily been people there who have been able to, on the sort of corporate level, been able to push it in a direction where the strategy was going to actually pay off. I mean, Michael Farrow famously wanted to create the Sun-Times network. It was not thought through with a foundation of original content, and so it was kind of destined to fail. But, you know, in their previous, you know, ownership under James Tyree, you know, there was a lot happening with the Sun-Times, and there were sort of some, you know, opportunities and, you know, some reason for hope. And that includes the Chicago Reader as well, which had gone through, under Creative Loafing, its own kind of ownership struggles as well.
Well, the Reader, you know, and we saw that in the last couple of weeks too, with the pushing back on the fact that there's been no movement on, on a contract. They unionized and they're looking for a contract with the Sun-Times. You know, as I think about that story and I think about DNA Info collecting Chicagoist, and I think about, it's just the last 10, 15 years of the media landscape in Chicago. Where are we at? Is it a healthy landscape to have the companies where they're at and who they're with?
I mean, I'll be really honest. I've been an optimist for the last couple of years, but I am not seeing a lot of encouragement here in the market. I mean, Tribune today announced that they're shuttering the MASH, you know, which was this sort of beginning platform, a way to teach media news literacy to high school students. And that was often seen as a sort of starter project for people who wanted to go into journalism, and people who had been in the MASH have gone on to some pretty great things. That is a, and you look at what happened with Red Eye, which has now gone to a weekly and is now a little bit of a shadow of its former self, which used to be a daily. I'm looking at what's happening with the Sun-Times and the Reader and saying, like, there are still people who are really passionate about the idea of what the Sun-Times and the Reader stand for, but there has not been an equal push by their leadership to get people to say, I'm going to, as a reader, invest in this paper with money. And that's really what we've seen with a lot of those kind of smaller, particularly I'm speaking of the Reader here, a lot of the smaller niche publications. Those are going to be supported by the subscribers.
Right.
Those are not going to be papers or digital media companies that are going to be supported by advertising in the future. It's just not going to happen.
Scott Smith, we're talking about the future of media. Scott Smith, our new media contributor here on The Download, which also editorial director at TeamWorks. Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, there's two things I want to talk about. One, which is we saw a story today, Robert Feeder again, about the idea that less and less people are watching local news. The May sweeps were out and they talked about, or the May ratings, and the big takeaway was that the number in a key demographic was down, that people are not watching local. And it might be a TV issue, and I want to get into it with you. But I also, at the same time, look to what Snapchat and others are doing to essentially create new ways for us to view television as we know it on the mobile platform. And I think both of those becomes a very interesting dichotomy of what
it's a big we're transition seeing. Point
yeah, there is
right
a big
now.
Transition yeah. point right now. Scott Smith, my guest on The Download. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. Scott Smith in studio tonight. He's our new media contributor here on The Download, 720 WGN, editorial director at TeamWorks, also a longtime media observer and participant here in town. Scott, the interesting transition we're seeing, as Robert Feeder, Daily Herald, says today, you know, that the numbers of people that are watching the local news it's a sharp decrease.
And it's a local evening news, though, which is important to keep in mind.
It is important because here at WGN Television, the morning news numbers are through the roof.
Yep.
But the evening news, the 10 o'clock news, the 9 o'clock, a lot of the stuff that we've known to be the source of local news for years. At a certain point, there has been talk of it sunsetting and talk of the end is near. We've heard it so many times at different conferences about people moving away from this platform, moving away from the 10 o'clock news. Twitter, Facebook, social media, you know, kind of bastardizes the whole thing by giving you the story 5 hours before you see it. And now you're starting to see the numbers reflect that. Is it an anomaly? in the way that, okay, maybe next month it'll be back up? Or are we seeing more and more people flee the idea of a concentrated 10 o'clock news?
I think we're seeing the number of people who are traditionally your 10 o'clock news viewer be more comfortable in the social media world and getting their news from that space. I think that's why you're seeing that erosion happening. But then you're also seeing the younger viewer replacing, you know, the idea would be the younger viewer would replace some of those older viewers. And those younger viewers are used to getting their news in a completely different way. They're used to sort of discussing it and rehashing it and creating memes about it. I mean, that's the thing, is that this is not necessarily the folks that are coming up that are in the younger space, that 25 to 34 range. They're actually used to creating content around pop culture and news, and they're essentially creating their own content around that. And so the idea of sort of passively consuming a sort of fabricated news product is weird to them. Live news products is a completely different thing. A live product of whether it's a television show or whether it's a news event or whether it's a live video stream that they're commenting on is a totally different thing. But an idea that the 10 o'clock news here in the Central Time Zone is sort of the idea that it is going to be, you know, regurgitated in some way, things that have happened is weird.
You read the comments on a feeder piece and you hear so many people just disparaging or taking shots at the local news. And you saw this a little bit last week as well with a different column. I personally, when I check out a newscast and I check out ABC or check out WGN or any of the other ones, I'm always amazed at what they can accomplish in such a short amount of time to be able to give you that information, do those stories. The one thing that I feel, though, is that they are really, really good at that format. And that format does not cross over platforms, meaning they don't put a lot into what they do on the web. They don't put a lot into what you see in social media. You've seen a little bit more Facebook Live, that kind of stuff. And you don't necessarily see them working in being authentic in some of the spaces. So is that really what we're talking about here? Is that television stations, they're very, really good at this one thing, but it might just be antiquated?
Yeah, they're really good at keeping you, if you are there at 10 o'clock, they are pretty good at keeping you till 10:35. They have figured out how to get you, and a lot of people talk about, oh, stop self-promoting or stop putting this on there or that on there. But there is an inertia factor that they are really good because they have studied these things to the nth degree. They are really good at keeping you watching once they've got you. The problem is that there are not a lot of people actually doing that initial tune-in. Now, there are your national, you know, broadcasts and things like that, and sort of news. We were talking during the break about sort of news special shows that, you know, a lot of people are familiar with, kind of the John Oliver version of news, where they're going to go a deep dive, but they're going to mix a news and an entertainment factor. The Daily Show is another example people cite and things like that. And there are other folks who are creating stuff around that too. And CNN has gotten really good at figuring out how to create, you know, entertainment versions of news.
Yeah,
some
Anthony
good,
Bourdaining of
some
the
bad.
News.
Right. Yeah, Anthony Bourdain's a great example. You know, the sort of live, you know, shout fest that they do are a less good example of that. But, you know, the problem is that they're not pulling new people in. And you're right. The average, 30-minute news segment, you know, the news show that they're going to do is not easily scoped down into a 5 or a 3 or a, you know, 1 minute news segment on social media. You actually have to have a completely separate staff that creates that product. And this is why you're seeing a lot of social media channels for local news are essentially just reposting whatever piece of viral video is like super hot that day. It's usually not something that's happening in your local area. It's something that's happening far away.
A cat in a raft.
Right.
Well, I'm interested in this. The reason I ask is because as we make a transition to some of the talk about what's happening in the social media space, Snapchat, which is known, you know, and you may not know much about this app, but it's an app that is really, it took the world by storm so much that it went public. It's you know, say what you will about it, it's stock right now. But the idea that they revolutionize in a way some of the social media stuff with taking pictures that disappear or videos that disappear, not only creating community around the idea of sharing images. And now they're talking about, are they at the forefront of revolutionizing how we see TV or how we used to see TV on platforms like your phone?
And honestly, they're so at the forefront, you're seeing companies like Facebook adopt what they're doing. And Facebook has got the scale and the user base to be able to kind of eat their lunch a little bit once they decide to kind of try to pull from them. And that's one of the dangers that Snapchat has right now. But what they've done with about five news companies, I think it's Vice and I forget the other couple. They've also got some original video that they're doing, something Wake Up America or something like that that they're doing. They're getting into this sort of hyperkinetic news style where it is a mix of commentary and news. And so there is, while you wouldn't necessarily call it point of view, you would definitely call it a voice.
Right.
It's a heavy on text on screen. It's heavy on a mix of pictures and video. Split
but
screen.
It's definitely for your phone. It's mobile.
It's produced. I mean, you can even look at it, and it is, if you're holding your phone in a vertical way, that's what it's made for. It's not made for this sort of typical widescreen horizontal.
Don't you
experience.
Think that to be the future? I mean, as more and more people even walk past the studio right now with their head in their phone, don't you see news, when you think of news organizations, local affiliates, and even some of the big ABC, NBC, instead of partnering with Snapchat, actually investing in the idea of this kind of technology to compete with the social media agencies?
Yeah, I mean, I think that most news organizations, whether they're television or sort of print-based and things like that, are still stuck in this idea that we have to be completist. We have to be sort of above the fray. We have to provide all the different viewpoints and things like that. And if we're getting into a voicier style, if we are presenting things in a certain sort of package kind of way, that's very typical in the sort of columnist way. Like that's not new, it's foreign to print.
People know
centric.
It.
You know, organizations.
Sports. Think of sports. Yeah.
If they get too much of their product ends up being like that, that somehow is a disservice to readers.
Well, I want to talk about Facebook. We'll have to do it next time. I'll leave it on the Washington Post is a great example. New York Times too. They've spent so. I mean, they are definitely the winners in covering news thanks to their adversarial sometimes adversarial relationship with the White House. But when you check out the Washington Post, the stuff that's coming through to you. 50% of it is editorial, meaning columns in some form, and it's written almost in a news style. And I think a lot of people will say fake news, and this comes from the idea of the Washington Post fake news, because they're reading a column. They're not reading necessarily the article that was the investigation on Jared Kushner. They're reading the response and the analysis from one of their contributors. But that, I mean, you see that now. It's hard to even pull those out from each other.
When we are reducing the way that we're consuming news into a couple different channels, your Facebook and Twitter and maybe Snapchat and things like that, when there is a way of the style of it is all the same, when your sort of news-driven article, when your opinion piece, when your analysis piece is all looks the same, whether it is appearing in the Facebook feed or whether it's in Facebook's instant articles or Google's AMP pages, the design of it is supposed to signal to you what kind of news product you're getting. We are seeing the design become flattened
because the social media companies you just mentioned, they don't care.
Right.
They don't care if you're reading a column or an article.
They're more concerned about the behavior that you have when you're there. They want to make sure that you're continuing to be engaged in their app. And so there, you know, we mentioned MASH in the last segment going away. You know, there is this lack of news literacy and this ability to judge for yourself based on certain signals, whether it's design or whether it's style or voice, whether you are reading a piece of news or analysis or commentary. And that has kind of gone away. And the ability for news organizations to kind of signal that, like what it is that you're actually viewing, is contributing to some of the sort of quote-unquote, you know, fake news, issues that we have.
I mean, I think it's a big issue. And I think that there used to be an ethical center to the news business to go out of their way to make a divide. And we hear that all the time. The news is separate than the editorial. But I think over time, when it just comes down to advertising and eyeballs, I think that on the design side, they're like, it doesn't matter.
I think there's a real problem right now in the idea of traditional news organizations not understanding that, like most younger viewers, and I say younger viewers, that 25 to 35 segment, view publishers as a brand because they see content coming out of all kinds of different spaces and they see the idea of what publishers doing. They are expecting a sort of contiguous, consistent voice in news publishers, and they're not seeing that. So when they see, let's say, Chicago Tribune say one thing in their news reporting, but another thing on the editorial page and another thing in their news columnists, there's a disconnect there, yeah. And that's another challenge that news publishers have right
Love
now.
Love when you come in studio, buddy. Scott Smith, new media contributor here for The Download, also editorial director at Teamworks, also a regular contributor here to the show. We'd love to have you back soon. These are great conversations to have for society, Scott.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here for the kids. I'm here to try to make the world a little bit better.